This is Sunday Skate on Sports Radio WEEI.
For the first time in 39 years, the Boston Bruins have won the Stanley Cup.
Talking Bruins and the NHL.
Sure, old-time hockey.
Like it is sure.
Yeah.
With Ken Laird.
Bunch of criminals. We ought to be in jail. That's all there is to it.
And WEEI.com Bruins writer Matt Kalman.
He's a killer.
Yeah. He's a mess.
Lace him up for some Bees talk right now on Sports Radio WEEI.
23rd of July, 2019. Another exciting edition of the Skate Podcast. Ken Laird and Matt Cowan from WEEI.com. Tough to top last week's guest, Jermaine Wiggins.
What about putting Bergeron on the trading block, right?
What a clickbait force that was.
Yes, it was clickbait. We got you all. You know what's funny is that every person that complained about clickbait...
Clickbait City.
Took the bait.
And... as we pointed out over and over, we're just fans of free speech. We wanted to give Wiggy his platform. We did so. This week's guest rivals Wiggy in terms of hockey notoriety, I would say, in this town. There's no doubting that. Whether he'll
Absolutely.
Have the hot takes that Wiggy had a week ago, that remains
to be seen. His takes can be pretty hot. I mean, not to ruin the surprise, but someone who works with Michael Felger, so he knows how to spin up a hot take now and then. And
dead. Splat. Splat.
Actually, the founding father of... Sunday Skate.
Correct. The founding father, as I'm aware of, Sunday Skate. DJ Bean, now of NBC Sports Boston, joins us here on the show this week. I believe, unless DJ, there was somebody before you I'm not aware of.
Oh, no. That was, we were the OG crew. Good times.
And who was we? You and Pete? No, Pete joined late.
And that was me and Joey Mac. Yeah. And Joey Mac, I'd never met Pete. Joey Mac was like, we should find a way to get that Pete Blackburn kid involved.
I heard Marchand has a broken hand.
And then he came in, and he was awesome, and he brought us muffins and started a pop culture podcast with me, and now he's everything I have.
Right. That pop culture podcast needs no plug from me, but it's called Brunch, and it is it's so hip, I don't even, it's beyond me.
Basically, the last, 16 episodes have been about Midsommar, so if you guys want a couple of Frady Cats talking about horror movies that they can't analyze at all, that's the place to go. I want to say this. Off the top, why did everybody have such a strong reaction to the Wiggy's take? I love Wiggy, and he's a hell of a hockey player. People don't know that about him. Very, very good hockey player. He regularly has some hockey takes that'll knock your socks off. He was saying that they should scratch Chara in the playoffs. So when I hear a level 50 hockey take out of Wiggy, I'm like, hell yeah, that's just Wiggy doing what Wiggy does.
If anybody thinks outside the box, nobody wants to hear it.
Well, that's because everything, and this is me being a 70-year-old man, is how can I turn this into a quote tweet?
Right.
How can I turn this into really, we all need something to complain about. How could you complain about Wiggy?
Well, that said, since you went there, what do you make of his take? Would you trade Bergeron for Stamkos or Malkin?
Oh, I mean, I would trade Bergeron for anything. The guy's terrible. You got to trade him. I totally agree with Wiggy's take. It's about time somebody brings up trading Bergeron. No, I wouldn't. And I don't know if either team would do that. If you trade Steven Stamkos for Patrice Bergeron, or if you trade Evgeny Malkin for Bergeron. I appreciate Wiggy's outside the box thinking, to borrow a phrase from Matt there, but I don't think trading a guy on that good a contract is how you solve your problems competitively or financially. I think that Bergeron, having Bergeron on the deal on which you have him, similarly to having Marchand and Pasternak on the deals on which you have him, are things that can make up for other shortcomings. Like, they're the reason why you can spend a little too much money on another guy, because you've got one of the best players in the world not making an AAV commensurate with his performance. So I would not trade him.
Okay, that's why I tried to rein Wiggy in and say that, you know, it wasn't necessarily about the specifics of trading a Patrice Bergeron. It was more about, you know, thinking outside the box, looking for these big trades and these big moves that get you over the top. You made it to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final and lost, and you needed scoring, so maybe this is the way to add to the scoring.
Well, I don't know if you guys are in agreement with me on this, but I don't think there is a single move that you make that says, okay, bam, you're back in the Stanley Cup Final. Or certainly not, okay, now you're going to go win the Cup. There's no trade or signing you can make that's as big as the Lightning getting bounced in the first round. And I think that that's kind of a tough pill for a lot of fans to swallow, because you saw the great run they went on, but it was a product of a lot of things bouncing right for them. Like, I don't think that any of us thought, okay, the Bruins are set it and forget it Stanley Cup finalists. I think that they needed the Lightning to lose in the first round, and if the Lightning hadn't lost in the first round, all the credit in the world to the Blue Jackets, and all the credit in the world to the Bruins for beating the Blue Jackets. But the Lightning would have beaten the Bruins again. Like, if the Lightning don't have that meltdown they had in the first round, they're probably beating you in the second round again. Now, going forward, you're either presumably seeing the Lightning in the second round, or you're seeing the Leafs in the first round, a Leafs team that, yeah, you were underachieving when you were just barely getting by them the last couple of years. But say you don't underachieve. Say you play to your strengths next season against the Leafs in the first round. I think the Leafs can beat you now. I think it's the Leafs have gotten to the point now where they're certainly the Bruins' peer, if not better. So I don't think that there's one single move, or really certainly leaving everything as is, where you say, okay, the Bruins are going to go back to where they were last year.
Yeah, I mean, this is exactly right. I mean, we talked about this last week, is that, you know, you made it to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final, and that's great, but do you really want to come back with exactly the same team and think that you're going to be there again? I mean, like you said, if Tampa doesn't lose in the first round again, you probably don't get out of the second round, and you were one game away for the second straight year of losing to Toronto in the first round. So, you know, you need to obviously improve somehow.
I saw the NHL power rankings came out, that tweet that everybody was, again, quote-tweeting and complaining about, because there wasn't enough love for whichever team. But, I mean, they're onto something there, where three of the top five teams in their power rankings are Atlantic Division teams. And ESPN, Emily Kaplan's power rankings, the top three teams are Atlantic Division teams. So it's not a commentary on the Bruins are bad.
Like, right.
I think that unequivocally you go throughout the league and people would estimate that they're at worst the fifth best team in the league, probably better than that. But the Lightning are ahead of them, and the Leafs are either right there with or right behind them. So, like, there's kind of no way out of that. I mean, you're not going to make any trade that's going to change up the landscape of the NHL and which teams play which and which teams are in which divisions, but that's the what's the word I can't – oh, alignment. You're not going to make a trade that realigns the NHL.
Right.
Yeah, and highlighting that, DJ, I mean, they have financial problems. I think that was the phrase you used. Just to take another kick at the can, you've got the Backes issue, you've got the RFA issue here with McAvoy and Carlo, you've got the future of Krug and Charlie Coyle to a lesser extent to decide. Of all those, what's the easiest to sift through? Because they're all pretty significant problems.
The easiest to sift through is probably, I mean, getting Carlo's going to be an interesting contract, I feel like, because I don't know if it's going to be similar to, it would certainly be of higher AAV, but did you see that the contract that Sisson signed today?
Yeah.
It was 7 years at under three per. I don't think that Carlo's going to get under $3 million, but I think that if I'm the Bruins, I'm signing Carlo to a deal like that, like super long-term, 7 or 8 years at an AAV that usually you don't see with 7, 8 year deals. They kind of did that with John Moore last year, but obviously Carlo's good and would be somewhere in the $4 million range. I think that he's relatively easy to figure out. And if it came to a bridge deal with him, then that'd be easy to get done too. But you know, McAvoy's the big one. I look at what Trouba got. And yeah, Trouba's older, and this is his third contract versus his second contract. But if I'm the Bruins and I believe in Charlie McAvoy, I'm going as many years as possible and paying the premium on the higher AAV there to get it done. But now that Trouba's signed, you're probably looking at $8 million-ish if you are going 7 or 8 years.
Yeah, I mean, you don't really have a choice with Charlie McAvoy. I mean, you can totally see where his camp is sitting. They're not going to take less than the, you know, maybe, you know, they'll take less than the eight, they'll take seven probably, but they're not going to take less money for that because they'd be crazy, because if they're going to go shorter term, they want more money now because, you know, you don't know what's going to happen here. But yeah, the Carlo thing is interesting too. I think because if I'm him, I don't lock up for a deal you're talking about, a longer term deal, because he's only really tipped, you know, got to kind of brush the top of the iceberg here.
He
had a great postseason that showed he could do it. If he does that in the regular season more regularly, he's obviously a lot more valuable than he is at this point in time. And I wouldn't, if I was him, I wouldn't lock up that long.
Yeah, and I'm just wondering what the market is going to end up being for players like him over the year. I mean, he's not Adam McQuaid back there. Like he's obviously a great skater,
right?
But he's just not much of an offensive player. And I feel like the NHL is moving towards, I guess not moving towards, it's always kind of been going that way, but you know, you reward the puck moving offense creating defensemen, and I don't know how much more his numbers will improve year to year. I mean, to your point, people saw this postseason that he can be a really good shutdown guy who obviously is pretty fleet of foot, but I don't see, say he signs a 3-year contract right now, I don't know how much more he gets once that 3 years is up.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to sit here and mock Joe Haggerty, because we had Wiggy on last week and we allowed him to express his opinion, but Kalman wants to rip his
piece. The godfather of my children. You watch your mouth.
Okay. See, Haggerty wrote about the Bees possibly missing out on the Lucic contract swap with James Neal. I read the piece. I thought it was worth an exploration. You hated it, Kalman. You want to just trash the guy.
It just doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense at this stage to swap bad contracts. There's only one way to fix this problem, and it's
kind of a desperate attempt by both teams just to hope the new surroundings
for Lucic
makes it all better. Yeah.
Oh, and the goal with those sorts of deals, though, is to end up with as few quote unquote
bad years
right. as yeah. possible. So I wouldn't. I would do that.
I could almost justify if it was a Neal for Backus part of it to say, okay, we think this guy could plug in next to Krejci. He had a bad year last year playing for a coach he couldn't get along with. The coach put him on the third line from the start of the season last year. It was kind of a lost year. At least the guy, scores some goals. But we know, I mean, DJ knows all too well the locker room presence that James Neal can be. Oh. That would be the anti-Backus.
I was just about to say. Sorry to interrupt you.
It's okay.
I always bite my tongue when things like this come. Like, why would you trade James Neal for Lucic? And it's like, you hate to say it, but it's like, now that team has to have James Neal on their team. Like fans, it's so weird the spots that fans pick in how much weight they put on intangibles. They'll see like a guy like smile in an interview and they'll be like, oh, he's just a good guy. You could tell he's a good guy. James Neal's not the worst person I've met in my life, but I mean,
remind us why James Neal got on your bad side.
What did he do? There were a couple instances. He's a rude interview, which that doesn't matter. I mean, as far as intangibles on the ice go, that doesn't matter. But I was talking to Jerome McGinley the year that
right.
He spurned the Bruins, and McGinley is obviously the salt of the earth, so he's putting up with it, and he's discussing kind of a challenging subject for him. This was within like 3 months of him doing something
right. It was right before the conference
pretty controversial
final. Right,
right, and he's standing in the background just making all this noise, like not making noise that in that like he's talking to somebody. He's just standing there trying to make as much noise as he can so my recorder doesn't pick it up. And as I say this back, I actually think it's kind of funny on his part, because he was owning the media. But even Aginla was giving me a look during it, like, yeah, sorry for this guy.
Right.
And I'm like, dude, who is this for? What do you?
Right.
I don't like. None of his teammates were like, yeah, buddy. And but that's just one. I mean, he's.
I covered his whole career in Pittsburgh. He was like that all the time. They got eliminated in the playoffs once. He was screaming at me for interviewing one of his teammates, just asking him, you know, question what happened in the game. He was just shouting like, "Shut up! Nobody wants to hear your questions." I mean, he is the worst person I've ever covered in sports media. I would say that.
Okay.
Definitively.
Wow.
But it's not like, I don't think it's in a David Price way where he kind of acts that way and his teammates are like, "Hell yeah, he's sticking up
right,
for
right.
it."
The opposite.
I don't really get.
Yeah.
I think that the teammates are more like,
yeah.
Hey, sorry, he's doing this.
Yeah, well, hockey doesn't stand for that kind of attitude, and that's part of why he's on his fourth team in 4 years now. So,
right.
But it doesn't change the fact that Backes, despite being a good guy, is a problem. it's amazing. They're just going to. It looks like they're going to have to play another year with him, right?
I mean, that's actually. So they're doing what I would have done with Seidenberg, where. Mm. I didn't understand what the rush was. I don't know how you guys felt at the time, but I really didn't see what the rush was with buying him out. The Bruins at the time were a fringe playoff team. Seidenberg, I think, had 2 years left on his deal, and I was like, you're just going to have to eat one more year. Then either he's reestablished value and you can trade him and eat half of it, or you can just buy him out with 1 year left,
right.
And it's not as tough a pill to swallow. And they bought him out with 2 years left so they could re-sign John Michael Lyles. And I was like, is that a forward step?
Yeah.
So I think with Backes, I mean, obviously it would have been pretty prohibitive to buy him out
right.
this summer. I think you just got to wait the year and... Again, like I guess there is some value he can provide in just being there. I would think that that Backes has a lot of pride, so that actually might become more challenging having a player who, like, let's not forget, like, what a career, great player. I remember. I can't remember if I wrote this or not, but this was when I thought that Don Sweeney was really having a tough go of it as a GM. But I was like, only Don Sweeney, the GM, could make me not like David Backes. Like, well, when they signed him to, only such a terrible contract could make me be upset that we're going to watch David Backes play here. And it's just, I mean, obviously we've beat up Sweeney enough for that deal over the years. It doesn't need to be rehashed, but yikes. And it sucks too, because every time I noticed this the other day, or it was probably a couple weeks ago, but we were on NBC Sports Boston talking about the Bruins, and Tom Giles brought up Backes, and he was like, now Backes, and you know, love David Backes. Greg has had a great career, great guy and everything. Like, we do always have that preface. We're like,
right.
We're so afraid to just say, there's a bad contract on the team.
Right.
Like, I don't think there was any, I don't think there's any buzz or rumor or misunderstanding that we think David
right.
Backes,
oh, of course.
Who's like this, like, American hero, is a bad.
Well, yeah, I mean, even after when he got in the lineup for the Toronto series, when he got back in the lineup for the Columbus series, I said the whole time, the impact he's had, you can never criticize Backes the player or Backes the person. It's the contract, and it's not his fault. So, you know, that's the way it goes in this league.
Yeah, I mean, I think back to Martin Lapointe, a guy who kind of had to eat crap his entire
right.
career in Boston. And it's like, I don't think that he told the Bruins he was that
right.
good.
Exactly.
I don't think that he and his agent, like, fudged the numbers to make him think he scored more goals than he did. That just happened to be the summer that Jacobs was like, hey, let's sign a free agent this summer. And the only way that the Bruins could sign somebody was by overpaying someone. And, I mean, would you say no to too much money? I certainly would, because I'm an upstand. No, I'm kidding.
So how would you – so not to drag this on much longer, but how does this get fixed?
I think that you have to eat this year of Backes and have a roster that –
How do you get these two guys signed and get into the season compliant?
That's the that's kind of the trick of it. I mean, you could. Giles says trade Halak, which I'm kind of scared to do, but that could be one solution. Kevin Miller, once he's healthy and tradable. I don't know where he stands right now as far as being able to be traded goes, but I think that he's probably logically the piece that isn't going to, you're not going to get a ton back, but I don't think that you're going to have to eat any money there. That frees up realistically, what, $1.5 million? Mm-hmm. Because you still have to fill that roster spot. I remember we used to get so frustrated. People would say, hey, trade Kelly, so now you have $3 million free. I'm like, no, well, you have probably $1 to $1.5 million free because players don't just replace them for free. But I think that that's probably the move. Like, you move one or multiple guys who aren't making a ton of money, and that frees you up. But it might be, I don't know, it might be more than that realistically, because they're looking at what? They've got under eight, is that it?
Yeah, under eight, and for two guys to sign. I mean, and
they're playing hardball
with
McAvoy. That's not going to happen. They're not giving McAvoy that deal. He threw out December 1st for a reason. They're going to try to lowball the guy, and it's going to end up getting messy.
That works so well for the Leafs, huh?
I know. That's what's happening, though.
But you know what? You can say, here's one area where I'll never even think of criticizing Don Sweeney, is re-signing his own guys. I thought that he was, I mean, the Marchand deal was obviously the first, hey, wow, that was a really good move by Don Sweeney thing, because we'd yet to really know how things would play out in the aftermath of the Martin Jones deal. That ended up, of course, being a pretty fair deal. But, I mean, the deal he got on Marchand was very fair. I legitimately, for the first time, thought that an offer sheet might come into play when they were taking their time with Pasternak. If you guys remember any of my EEI days, I was a big stop freaking talking about offer sheets guy, because agents will tell you they don't happen because teams are afraid of inflation, and if they're going to sign somebody to an offer sheet, it's got to be for an exorbitant amount. Otherwise, all you're doing is creating a little bit of inflation, which is why the Canadians, I don't think, were given enough crap in the moment for their offer sheet to Sebastian Aho. I think that we all waited for them to match, and then we were like, oh, that was so stupid. But really, in the moment, I imagine teams throughout the league were looking around and saying, what are they doing? Like, that's not a no-brainer to not match. The only reason you should sign someone on an offer sheet is if you think there's no shot it's getting matched. Anyway, Bruins
waited
out.
I can explain to you why it was a good offer sheet, but we'd have to do it over a beer or something, but I can explain it to you.
Oh, is that the...
Calvin is the Mark Bergevin defender of the skate podcast.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. We've found one.
He loves action.
Hey, you know what? It was an exciting, like, 18 hours. That was the one of the few moments this offseason where the NHL took people's eyes off the NBA for a second. But to get back, you know, going back to your original point with Wiggy and how there aren't like these huge seismic moves, I feel like that's the only way that the NHL could ever take back some of the attention from the NBA in the summer.
Because
it's crazy. I remember even like as recent as 3-4 years ago, I'd be excited for NHL free agency, and you'd watch the Sportsnet and all that, and you'd watch all those feeds. And now the NBA is so almost unrealistically incredible in the off season that you don't hear a peep about the NHL now.
The hard cap, the owners look at it, the hard cap is saving them money every year, year to year. They're making more and more money. They don't realize the marketing and exposure possibilities they have, where if they had a crazy salary cap like the NBA has, with all these exceptions and these different rules to actually create, you know, attention and excitement that would pay off 10, 20 years from now, even in cities where no one cares about the team, but... You know,
it's such a good point.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've written that, but that's a column. Like, how the hard cap has ruined the NHL.
It's ridiculous.
And you think back to the NBA lockout, right? There was a brief NBA lockout a few years ago, right?
Right.
And I remember talking to basketball writers, and they were like, hey, so tell me about this NHL cap. Because seemingly, the NHL is doing it right, and the NBA has kind of created this mess. And I remember thinking, I was like, oh, cool, people think the NHL is doing something right. Yeah, well, so basically it's just this, and you're right. Like where people were once praising the NHL's cap, yeah, and I'm sure the board of governors still loves it. It really has
exactly
given way
it,
to the NBA to
right
just take over the summer.
Well, because the NHL owners only care. I mean, how great Jeremy Jacobs, obviously the leader in fighting for this cap. Well, how great does
right
it make him look? Like he's not. He can't be accused of being cheap anymore because Don Sweeney
he
can't get these
to the cap
exactly, and you can't get these guys signed. But what is he really spending compared to what teams in the other sports are spending? And what is he taking in terms of just the Bruins? Never mind all the other entities he's got going on. But, you know, you can't say, oh, Sweeney's not giving, you know, they're not giving it to McAvoy, they're not giving it to Carl. Why didn't they get in on Panarin? They couldn't even be in on these people because of this hard cap. It saves them the embarrassment and still makes them a ton of money. But does it help the sport in the long run, long after, you know, Jeremy Jacobs is on this earth? No, of course not.
Well, as you say,
no,
this is a separate column, but the NBA might win the offseason, but it doesn't help them in the ratings because they still get trashed around here by the Red Sox, even though people want to bash baseball. But that's a separate issue for another time. Go ahead, write your column. You and DJ agree. I'm not going to interrupt. Before I let you go, though, DJ, do you give your approval of the skate going forward? Do you approve of everything that's been done? We brought Pete back, so we kind of like bastardized the old show. Any issues? You want to get anything off your chest? Rip away.
No, I mean, I'll complain about the hour whenever the skate is on. I mean, that's a complaint that you'll probably remember goes back to the early days of Sunday skate when it was, hey, 8 to 10, you know what, we can do it. All right, cool. How about like 4:15 a.m. to like 4:19 a.m., but you don't get to do 4:17 and 4:18. So that's gonna be. We're only gonna have time for a quick call from Maria from Watertown
and Fred in New Hampshire. Yep.
Fred in New Hampshire, who of course loves Lucci and Lucci and Krejci.
Marcus and Charlie. I told you they'll be naming all kinds of babies. Marcus and Charlie.
No, when I've heard it in the mornings. I'm obviously not much of a morning guy. I have wonky work hours, so even we're doing this at 11:50, and it's ungodly that I'm awake right now. But I mean, you guys were always Ken. You were always kind of the key to the first iteration of Sunday Skate because I wasn't much of a host at that time. Didn't really know how to do it. So when you would come in, you would give us a structure that we were probably lacking. And I mean, I'm always down to hear Pete talk, he takes, and Matt's always kind of been my Bruins beat writer whisperer since I was new at Restucia and didn't know where to go. So in all seriousness, I love that you guys are doing a hockey thing. So Happy to talk to you guys, and glad that the skate hasn't totally washed its hands of me.
Not yet, and we appreciate.
And I'll also shout out. You guys have a very good social media presence. I think that you guys are doing that right.
Thank you.
That's Matt Kalman.
That is all Matt. He is ferocious on Twitter.
Ah, nice.
Well, we welcome you back anytime. Thank you for trailblazing for us.
Yes, thanks a lot.
Carry on the DJ Bean tradition. Keep up the good work at NBC Sports.
Yes, thanks, friends.
All right, man.
Take it easy.
We had some listeners to the Skate Pod on Twitter. Follow us at the Skate Pod. We are soaring up near 700 right now, crushing the
Off-Day Podcast. Pushing 700.
Which has some terrible debut tonight. Which, by the way, Bradford is just so in the bag for. They have this launch party at Lord Hobo. You and I still schlepping around here in the studios. It's fine. We don't need the help. But anyway, here were some listener questions, what they wanted to hear about. See if you can address these in short order.
Yeah.
KHL defection from Pavel Schenn.
Yep, that's a good sign. Get a 7th-round pick from Russia. Anytime a Bruins draft a Russian, I never expect to see them ever again after development camp. So this kid's going to come to North America at least. So that's a good sign.
How many roster spots legitimately up for grabs this year coming into camp?
Three. None on D, right? And just maybe three forward spots. Definitely two and maybe a third because you never know if you have to drop somebody from one of those bottom six to clear some cap room.
And because of that, Providence prospects under the radar with a shot of making the team, and Sinishin in particular, somebody was asking about. Do you think he could make it?
Yeah, I mean, that's a cheap option for your bottom six if that's the way you go to clear some cap space, if he ever gets it, but I'm not a Sinishin believer.
College free agents.
Yeah, they're always looking for those guys, and we saw Cooper Zeck come in during Providence last year. He's a kind of Torrey Krug type. Not going to make say he's Torrey Krug. No one is. But a guy who down the road, you know, a year or two, little seasoning, could be a puck mover on the back end for them.
And Krug and Coyle gets lost in this whole thing. Krug,
yeah.
These guys are both coming into the last year of their deals. I think you believe, and I kind of do too, that the Krug contract is ready to be announced when they get their cap in order. It's kind of done. It's just the details maybe fine-tuned. Am I putting words in your mouth?
No, I mean, I don't know about done, but I mean, geez, if you've waited this long.
Right. It's got to be.
You're
like,
clearly planning on keeping him, and I can't imagine keeping him through and letting him walk. You know.
What about Coyle? Would they?
Yeah, the Coyle thing is they're going to have to get that done. I mean, maybe they wait a little bit on that. It's maybe not on the front burner here, but.
They trust him, right? I mean, it's not like they're in doubt of he was enough of a fit, although Johansson was there on the wing with him.
Yeah, but I mean, you think he's enough of a fit just because of all his versatility and the fact that you do still have to look down the road at the David Krejci, even Patrice Bergeron heir apparent, and if that's not in the system right now, you're looking at, you know, a Beecher going 2-3 years from now, even turning pro to first learn the game, you're going to have to keep a guy like Charlie Coyle. So it's a huge keep as well, and you know, you look forward to the next year's cap. Again, they're saying it's going to be a small increase because these morons keep screwing themselves by not exercising the elevator.
Yeah,
and as long as the Players Association isn't on the right same page with each other, this is what's going to happen, and it puts the teams in a bind.
All right, Matty, we'll do it again next week. Another special guest, I am sure. Matt's back off 5 days of vacation, so he'll be at it on Twitter as well. Any final thoughts for the fans?
Just keep following us on @TheSkatePod and make sure we kick the off-day pod's butt.
And give us a 5-star rating.
Five-star rating on all the platforms. And then maybe we'll do what they do on some podcasts. We'll just start reading your 5-star reviews to pump up our morale.
Love that. See ya.